Pacifica owned and listener supported for over 50 years. This is 90.1 KPFT and FM HD1 Houston.
Thanks for joining me again here on So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and it's found only on Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT. I'm Larry Thompson, here to host another fine storyteller. Now, tonight's fabulous crop of stories is coming to you from my guest, Elizabeth Beeman. Now, Elizabeth hails from Justin, Texas, not just in time, just in Texas. And you may not recognize that name. Just imagine cruising up to Fort Worth and then you kind of head across over to Denton, and you're going to pass right through Justin, that little garden spot right up there north of the Metroplex. Elizabeth is a Texan, she's a country girl. And she is a true farmer's daughter. Her whole family is full of storytellers, according to her. She's just the only one that gets paid for it. Now, she's got more than a few stories that she gets help telling with fabulous puppets as well. Unfortunately, being on the radio, we're not going to be able to show you any of those puppets tonight. I'm anxious to see if we hear any of her voices in the background, but that's a completely different story. You'd have to catch her with those puppets at the South Lake Public Library in South Lake, Texas. And interestingly enough, Elizabeth was once named the number 8th position on the list of 10 things to love about living in South Lake. Now, she's a lifetime member of the Tejas Storytelling Association. She also participates with the Little D Storytelling Guild in Denton, Texas, and she's my friend, Elizabeth Beeman. Welcome, Elizabeth. I don't believe KPFT listeners have ever heard you on So What's Your Story. I hope you're excited to be here.
I am so excited to be here. It's such a joy. I was raised close to Houston, and so I'm very familiar also with the Houston Storytellers and their guild. And so we are so thankful that you would include me today.
That's excellent. And by the time we're done, we'll just take your temperature and see if that excitement still carries over to the end of this here, these shenanigans. You like to say you're a true farmer's daughter. So I'm guessing that means that you was raised up on a farm. And did the animals tell more stories than the people, or the people told more stories than the animals?
Well, we didn't really have very many animals. My father was a rice farmer west of Houston. And so we grew up in the woods about 5 miles from the farm. We did not grow up on the farm, but my daddy was a rice farmer. And so we have a lot of stories about that.
Well, I like the sound of that. We grew up in the woods. So there's the city, there's the town, there's the farm, and then there's the woods.
Yes.
That is a very evocative location to grow up in, mm-hmm. in the woods.
Yes.
We're going to crank right up with stories right here. Your very first story tonight is called Excitement on Monk Street. Now, where does this story come from?
My grandmother, on the maternal side, was born in Oakland, California in 1901. And so I'm going to tell about that.
All right. Well, let's hear Excitement on Monk Street.
It was September 1901, and the family, the Beck family, was so excited. Fanny Matilda, she was so excited. She was about to have her first baby. September 11th, little Eleanor Winters Beck arrived, and everybody was just so excited. They lived in a tall house on Monk Street, which overlooked the San Francisco Bay. And so when my grandmother, when she got older, she told me about the excitement that when she arrived. She was like one of those children that was born with a silver spoon in her mouth. And I actually have from her first birthday her silver napkin ring that is engraved to say, "Happy birthday, Eleanor Winters Beck." Well, I wish I could say she was a little fancy little girl because she was born into a fancy house, but she was not a fancy little girl. She was a tomboy. And so early on, when she had to stand on the table or on the chair for the dressmaker to come and measure her and pin the things, she would wiggle, she would get in trouble, and she hated dresses. That's a big part of this story. She hated dresses. And so in 1901, you wore dresses for everything and way into the 30s. And so in 1906, when she was just 5 years old, she remembered seeing the fires that happened from the earthquake across the bay in San Francisco, the natural gas fires. And she remembered that. She could see that from her home at night. When the milkman came in his cart with his pony, she would climb the tree and she would try to throw stones to make the little milk cart run away when the milkman was in the house talking to her mama. So she was always getting in trouble. And then as she grew, she began to play sports. She loved to swim. She loved to play tennis. She loved to golf in older, as an older teenager. But as I said before, she had to wear dresses for everything. When she went down to the beach, she had to wear a dress. When she went to play tennis, she had to wear a dress. She hated that. She hated wearing dresses. And she was a beautiful young lady, but that didn't matter because she wanted to be in pants, and they did not allow that back then. So as she grew, she finished high school and she went to college. And she went to USC in Berkeley, which was only about 20 miles from Oakland. So she was able to go to college, and that was pretty unusual back then for a young woman to go to college. And she actually majored in like sporting things. She loved sports, and so when she did that, she joined a sorority, and then she started to work part-time and go to school. And she graduated from college in 1919. And then she went to work for A.G. Spalding and Company, which is a sporting goods store that was started a long time ago in the mid-1800s, but it had expanded to Oakland area. So there she was working. And so as she worked, she began to know, and she still had to wear dresses. That was the thing, even to play golf, even to play tennis, even to go swimming. Well, one day after she was there for about a month at A.G. Spalding Company, a tall man came in. He was very handsome, and he came right up to her and he asked her, "Do you sell golf balls?" And she said, "Well, of course we sell golf balls. We're a sporting goods store." He said, "Would you show me what you have?" And so she walked him over. And then he had the audacity to say, "Would you consider going out to dinner with me?" And she said, "Absolutely not. We did not date the clientele." And so he said, "All right." And so he left, and about a week later he came back. He said, "Do you sell tennis rackets?" She said, "We are a sporting goods store. Yes, we sell tennis rackets." He said, "I'd like a few new tennis balls as well." So she showed him the section, and sure enough, again, he said to her at the end of the transaction, "Would you consider going out with me to dinner?" And she said, "Absolutely not. This has not changed in a week." Well, about 2 weeks later, he came in again. He wanted a new basketball. He was very athletic. He played football, she found out later, for a college. And as he's talking to her, he's asking her about different things and what her interests are. And she's trying to be very evasive. She's very frustrated with it. And then he says to her, "Would you consider going out to dinner with me?" And she said, the answer has not changed. And he said, "Well, I just want to let you know, I just acquired a plane, an airplane." She goes, "What?" This was 1921. He said, "Yes, I have an airplane. I thought you might like to go for a ride." She goes, "Oh, well, all bets were off." She thought, "Oh, I can do that." And so she said, "Yes, I'll go out with you." And so next Saturday, when they got together, he took her for a bite to eat, and then he took her to the airfield. Now, in the day, back in that day, all of us are used to seeing airplanes going over DFW, Hobby, Houston Air International, but not in those days. People saw very few airplanes in the sky. And so they got to the airstrip, and there was a yellow plane, a silver plane, and a red biplane. And she went, "Oh, I love that red biplane. It's beautiful." He said, "Well, I'm glad because that's mine." She goes, "What?" "Yes, it's mine. And I would love to take you up." She goes, "Could I drive it?" He says, "Oh, no, you can't drive it. We don't drive a plane. We fly it, but you get to sit in the front because in this biplane, there were two seats, one in the front, one in the back." And so she climbed up in her dress onto the plane, onto the wing, and then helped her into there. And she got in, and her heart was such a flutter. And so she got up there, and they started to go. And he did a couple of loops, and she started yelling, "Can I drive it? Can I drive it?" He said, "We don't drive the plane, we fly it. But yes, hold on to the front stick, and I'll let you slowly pull up." Well, she went straight up in the air, and she was going, he's saying, no, push it forward." And she's, "Yeah." And she was just her heart. He said, "Let go, let go." And she let go of the stick, and he took her a few more moments and yeah, did a few more loops. She was over the top, and he came down and landed. And he helped her get out of the plane, and she was just ecstatic. I don't think she could hardly breathe when all of a sudden he began to sing. "Daisy, Daisy, tell me your answer, do. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a carriage, but you'll look sweet upon the seat of my bicycle built for two, and I have a plane." Well, I just want you to know, my grandmother right then accepted that proposal of marriage. First date. And after a few months, they planned a wedding. And I remember telling you about how much she did not like dresses. But I have a picture of her wearing a dress with a train that cascades down a flight of stairs outside, and it's at least 25 feet long. And that was in 1923. And as they would say, they lived happily ever after.
Fantastic. Now, is that story 100% true?
No.
Oh, well, it's close enough.
Are
I
we
really
only
like
allowed
how
to
you
tell
weave
true
all that
stories of
together. Oh, you, oh yes, I forgot to tell you that T in KPFP stands for truthful. That, no. That is something
Everything else
else.
you'll hear today will be perfectly true.
I caught that part in the beginning about throwing stones at the milk cart to get the milk cart to take off
Yes.
while the milkman was in talking to your mother that,
Yeah.
or her mother. That is fantastic.
Yes.
Is it
That's true.
important for you to put those kind of small details into your stories?
Is it easy for me to? I
Is
think
it
so.
important to?
It is important, yes. because that makes a person more real, more relatable.
I think, and it also gives the audience something to sort of latch onto and helps their vision. And you could just see, folks, I know you're listening to this. You might be driving in your car. You're probably not flying your car, but you're driving your car. You might be at home. You might be on your couch, but you can imagine that red biplane swooping through the skies. Oh, that's a fantastic story.
Thank you.
I like that. And the music in the middle, that's excellent. Not
Thank you.
everybody can do a cappella like that. Now, your next story is called My Mother Loved Birds.
Yes.
And I think that maybe we all might say that we like birds, we enjoy birds, but I get the feeling that your mother might have taken it to another level.
That would be correct.
All right, so let's hear My Mother Loved Birds.
Well, as you heard it at the first about us living in the woods, we came, my mother had six children, and we lived in the woods from the 60s until I was grown. And so one day when I was about 15 years old, I was the oldest. We were all just hanging around early Saturday morning. Daddy'd already gone to the farm. And my mom was sitting there having her cup of coffee and reading the Houston Chronicle. And all of a sudden she gasped. And we went, "Oh, what, mommy, what?" Because all six of us, man, we had nothing to do. We were watching cartoons. And so we ran over and she said, "Oh, canaries, $1 each, limit six." And we said, "Where are they? Where are they, mommy?" And she said, "In Sugar Land." Now, Sugar Land was 60 miles from where we lived. And we said, "Well, what can we do about that, mommy?" She said, "Well, we're going to Sugar Land. So we have six kids, we can get six canaries." And so we piled into our station wagon with the natural air conditioning because there was no such thing as air conditioning back then. We rolled all our windows down. Baby Jeff was two, so he stood up beside my mommy where it was safe so she could put her arm out to hold him if she had to stop suddenly. And we drove 60 miles to Sugar Land. And when we got there, we found it was a big parking lot with lots of shops, and there was a pet store. And we all went in there, all six of us, plus our mommy, and we got to look around. It was so much fun. There were puppies, there were cats, there were finches, they were, oh, fish. But what we came for was those canaries. And so mommy let us pick which canary we wanted. And there was a huge cage full of them. There were yellow and white, yellow, yellow and orange, orange and black. They were beautiful. So we got six. Now, baby Jeff didn't care which one he got, but now we got put them in a little, they put them in little paper boxes so we could hold them, but not baby Jeff. But we also had to buy four of these six canaries. We had to buy the big cage, right? And we had to buy the food. And then the salesman really did a good job because he sold us a record to teach the canaries how to sing. Now, we thought that they would know how to sing, but this man says they are not going to know how to sing. So you're going to play this on your record player and they will learn how to sing. We were so excited. So this $6 transaction turned into quite a bit of money. But here we went back from Sugar Land all the way home, 60 miles. Our hair was blowing. We were just chittering like birds ourselves, holding our baby birds. And we got home and we lived in a brand new house. It had beautiful wood floors. It had beautiful, we lived in the woods. So we had these huge windows that my mother and dad had asked the architect to design. So there were windows, floor to ceiling, sliding glass doors. The down in the family room, there were three sides of windows, plus the little glass shelves that went in between those for decorations. So we've set up the big cage. We put all six canaries in there, and then we put on the record. Now, I can't sing like a canary, but I can pretend, and this is what it sounded like. It was a full orchestra with a canary singing with it, and this was like it was la 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 la, and we all watched the birds, and all the birds would do was pout. What? They were pouting. So we fed them, we watered them, and we just were so sad. So for days, every day, we put on the music. But the canaries would not sing, they pouted. So my mom said over about 2 weeks, she says, "You know what? I think we should open up and let the canaries out in the house. And then when they're flying and we're playing the music, it will be awesome. They will start to be so happy, they are going to sing." Well, we thought that was a great idea. We were kids, you know? So we opened up, we put on the music. We opened up the cage and they all flew out and they all flew to the family room where the three sides of windows were and those shelves. And they all landed. And they all, we watched them just desperately, and they all began to poop. Then they flew back into the living room, which we had that newfangled fluorescent lighting. There was a shelf, you couldn't see the fluorescent lighting, but it shone up to the ceiling. So they flew and they sat on that shelf, and we looked, and the music was playing. And all the canaries did was poop. They flew back and forth and back and forth, and all of the music played, and all our canaries could do was poop. Well, we were still having a great time. Mom was laughing. We were having a great time when Daddy came home from the farm. Now, he came home sweaty, hot from being out in the field. And he walked into his new house with the wooden floors, with the beautiful windows, and with the canaries pooping everywhere. And he said, "Ellie," that was my mom's name, but that was sort of sharp the way he said it. She goes, "Yes, Robert." He says, "Why are the canaries out?" She goes, "Because they wouldn't sing. So I thought if we let them out and they flew, that they would sing for us. Don't you think it's beautiful?" He says, "No, kids, go get the crab net." Now, a crab net is a long pole with a round net on the end. And so that was a lot of fun. We ran and got the crab net and we started catching the birds and putting them back in the cage. Well, I just want you to know that every day we continue to play this music. La 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 la. And all the canaries would do was pout. And so finally, about 2 weeks later, my mama said, "You know, I think these canaries will be really happy if we let them out in the woods." She said, "You know, they'd be happy because they'd be out there with the other birds. And then they would sing." We thought that was a great idea. We're kids. So we took them, we were able to hold our own bird except for baby Jeff, and we took them and we let them out. And for about 30 minutes, we could see orange and white, orange and black, yellow, yellow and white for about 30 minutes. And then no more. We never heard them sing except on that re record. But when we thought about it many years later, I thought, you know, Houston was not a native area for canaries. So maybe the owls or the hawks, maybe they became a meal for those. I hope not. But my girlfriend told me that years later, when she was in Alpine, she saw a wild canary. And I said, "Oh, maybe that was one of our wild canaries." And so then I had hope. And that is one of the reasons I know that my mom loved birds and loved us. Thank you.
Fantastic. I can another one where I can just picture that scene, but I want to we should make a cautionary statement. Little Jeff was standing in the front seat of the station wagon. What about this 5-point harness on the car seat and all of that? That's from the time past. Oh my
Yes.
goodness. And everybody had their bird, and everybody got to hold their bird except for little Jeff.
Yep.
That is amazing. Well, folks, if you're just joining us, I'm Larry Thompson, the host of So What's Your Story Tonight? And you've been listening to my guest storyteller, is Elizabeth Beeman. This is, of course, So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community station, 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville. And don't forget KPFT's free internet on HD2 to meet your news, arts, and entertainment needs. We are proud to be here because just as KPFT is Houston's community station, So What's Your Story is Houston's community show. We have guests with ordinary folks with extraordinary stories to tell, just like that one from Elizabeth with her mom, carting everybody 60 miles to Sugar Land. It's hard to imagine anybody being 60 miles from Sugar Land these days. It seems just enclosed by everything, but nonetheless, a canary shop, a pet store selling canaries in Sugar Land. Elizabeth, part of our passion here at So What's Your Story is the idea that everyone has stories to tell. And I'm sure you would agree with that statement.
Oh, absolutely. That's when I was growing up, my mom had insisted on having a round table, and all six of us children, after daddy would he'd eat and he'd get up and go sit down, watch the news, and then she would sit and she would encourage us. She had stories to tell, but she would always encourage us to tell about our day, and I believe that's one of the ways that we started.
Now, who was the, if you were sitting around that big round table, dinner's over, mom's sitting there, dad's watching the news, which of the children would you say was the best storyteller at that time?
Well, I actually thought about it even a little bit further back than that. My dad told me a story in his 70s that when he was 18 months old, they lived in La Porte, Texas, and he was one of six children. But at that time, he was the fourth, so he was 18 months old. And his brother, which is my Uncle William, took him at 4 years old, took him up on the top of the roof of the barn. And when my grandmother came running out saying, William, what are you doing with the baby? He said, I'm showing Robert the world. And so I really think that even that far back, my Uncle William at 4 years old had vision to see. And so, yes, there were storytellers around our round table, but even I can see like generations that have been storytellers.
Well, it's also clear from several things you've said tonight that your family had a casual relationship with safety. That I think we could agree with that. Now, I'm not, boy, we'll see. Now, your next story for us tonight is titled Hummingbird. And where does this story come from?
So you now know how my mother loved birds, but when I was three, we lived between three and four. We lived in Katy, Texas, the little tiny town of Katy, Texas, on Avenue D, in a two-bedroom home with a back porch screened in. And my mommy had just had her third child, and was and so I was outside in the front yard. But that back in the day, that was okay to be there because it was a very small town, and I was in the front yard, and I found a hummingbird, and it was dead. And so I picked it up and I ran in the house and I said to my mommy, 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 I found a hummingbird and it's dead. Can you make it better? And she looked at me with my big brown eyes, my long dark braids that she braided every day till I was in fourth grade. She looked at that little hummingbird. It had the ruby throat, the green back. And she said, "Well, we'll try." So she put the baby down and she got an eyedropper and she made sugar water. And she drizzled it up back and forth on the beak. And that little hummingbird laid there for a few seconds and then it came to life. And it was sitting there just sort of shaking. And I said, "Oh, mommy, I love it. Can I keep it? It's my pet. I love it. I want it so bad. Please, mommy, please." And mommy said, "Stop." Now, to be fair to my mommy, she heard me cry a lot. So sorry about that, mom. But in the three or four, I saw that sweet little hummingbird and it had come to life. And so I thought, surely she'll let me keep it. But she said, "Absolutely not. It's a wild thing. We're not going to keep it. But what we will do is we'll put it on the back porch where it's screened in and we'll nurse it to health. And I'll teach you how to feed it. And that'll be fun, Elizabeth." And I said, "Oh, yes, I want to do that, mommy." So we made more sugar water, made a bowl of sugar water. And then we went out to the porch. And when we would put the eyedropper into the sugar water, we would hold it up. And that little hummingbird was really smart. It would fly back and forth, the whole length of our home that was all porch, screened in porch, back and forth. And then it would come up and it would feed out of that eyedropper. And mommy even told me I could put it in my mouth and then let the little hummingbird come see if it would come feed there. And sure enough, it came in. My eyes would cross and I would just watch it as I could hear those little wings just going 90 to nothing. You know how fast their wings go. And then it would fly off and back and forth. I was so happy. A few days later, I came cr in crying. "Mommy, mommy, oh, mommy, the hummingbird won't eat anymore. It's gonna die. Oh, I love it. It's my pet." "Stop, Elizabeth. Let's look out the window, the kitchen window, onto the porch, and let's see what the hummingbird is doing." And sure enough, the hummingbird flew back and forth, and then it went and sat on the edge of that sugar bowl and fed itself. And mommy said, "Oh, it's all better. We can let it go now." I'm sorry. I wish I could say I didn't cry, but I did. I won't expose you to that, but it was a whale, I'm sure. And she says, "Okay, let's go catch the hummingbird. We'll catch it, and then we'll let it go out our backyard, and then we can watch it feed on our flowers." I was okay with that. And so, as she held the baby, I caught the bird and let it out the back door, and it sure enough. For weeks, it fed on all the flowers in our backyard. And that's when I knew not only did my mom love birds, but that's when I first really realized how much she loved me.
Marvelous. Now, who is the best audience to hear a story like that? Do adults appreciate that story as much as kids, or do kids find a lot more excitement in that story than adults?
I think that the mothers enjoy it, but I think kids enjoy it once they hear how young I was when I found that hummingbird.
And when you use that story now, do you happen to have a hummingbird puppet that you
I
use
do
when you're
have
telling it?
one. I do have a puppet, hummingbird puppet, but no, I don't use a puppet for that particular story.
Well, now, if you don't use a hummingbird puppet for the story called The Hummingbird, what in the world do you use a hummingbird puppet for?
I think I'm one of those collectors, you see pretty things,
Oh, okay. It's not in your rotation, as they
No,
say. It just
no.
happens to be a puppet that you
Right.
picked up. Now, what puppets do you have that do coincide with stories that you tell?
I have a monkey puppet. Her name is Mabel, and she's a big Rangers fan. She's been sad this particular season, but I have developed over the years, I developed so good a rapport with Mabel that children would bring their monkey puppets to story time and tell me that their monkey puppets were named Mabel. And one 3-year-old one time told me, His mom addressed him in the opposing team, and he was three, and he told his mom, "Great, now I'm not going to get the button," because we played button with Mabel and the children, and because it was the opposing team, he figured he was flat out of luck.
He wasn't going to, you know, what is the, well, you know, if he was National League maybe, or if he was American, it would probably make a difference. And Mabel is a Rangers fan. So
Oh, yes.
now the folks around the Houston area, they're probably going to be Astros fans, but I'm sure they know who the Texas Rangers are.
Sadly to say, they're thinking, "Oh yeah," but they're not worried about the Rangers. They have their Astros. Go team.
Go team. That's exactly right. So the monkey is a big hit. That's a puppet that
Yes.
everybody responds to.
Yes.
A friend of mine has a wolf. She has a wolf puppet, and we were at a festival, and she was telling the story with this wolf puppet, and something happened. The stage was a little uneven, and about halfway through the story, the microphone fell over right onto the ground. And so my friend is standing there with this wolf puppet on her arm, and she looks over to the stage manager, and he rushes out and he picks up that microphone. He steadies it up there and he puts it right in front of the mouth of the wolf. So I'm not sure if he really understood what puppets were doing or not, but Karen had to move over to the side so she could continue her story. I'm a big fan of puppets myself. We have a lot of storytellers around that use those and use them quite effectively. Now, folks, we're here on So What's Your Story? And we're in KPFT in Houston, Texas. And Houston is H-Town, and H-Town is Storytown. And this show, So What's Your Story, started it all. We were the first storytelling platform in Houston, and how it has grown. 2008 is when we started this thing. That is a whole bunch of years ago. I'm not a math major. I cannot do that math in my head. Of course, we couldn't do any of this without our very best to sponsor the Houston Storytellers Guild. They help keep us on the air, as well as all of our listener supporters. And the Houston Storytelling Guild is a great place to learn the art of storytelling. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30. And the next swap is coming up in a couple of weeks. You can check out their website at www.houstonstorytellers.org. That's ORG. They'll have a Zoom link there and information on upcoming events. And while you're there, you might even consider becoming a member. I'm pretty sure if you root around in your couch, you'll have enough change there. Also, enjoy past shows of recordings of So What's Your Story right there on that website under the menu and the link of radio program. We can't forget about our folks at the Moth either. Their Moth at Warehouse Live is back in business. And Elizabeth would remind us all that storytelling is all over the state of Texas and beyond. And you can crank up your storytelling skills by joining the Tejas Storytelling Association and even the National Storytelling Network. And Houston has a guild affiliated with the TSA. A lot of fine storytelling going on in the area. Now, Elizabeth, we do want you to share one more story with us tonight. But before we do that, I wanted to ask you if you somebody just walked up to on the street and cornered you, and you had a t-shirt on that said, "I'm a storyteller," and they said, "Well, I want to be a storyteller too." What would your advice be for them?
Oh, absolutely. We have such good, there's so many places that you could plug into. In March, we have a wonderful festival, the Tejas Storytelling Festival, and everybody is welcome to come to that. We're going back live this coming year. We had to do it by Zoom for a couple of years because of that, that virus. But we're excited to include that. They said that we might even have a few opportunities, like if you're in Houston and can't come all the way to Denton, that they might have a few things that they're going to do on Zoom. But the nice thing about Tejas is that they do workshops all through the year, and
So
so
true.
they're pretty reasonably priced. And the thing, if you really want to become a storyteller, just start telling to people. Just the, and it's the story's a beginning, a middle, and an end. That's it. I
That's
went to a,
really
a
it. That's all
yeah,
there is to it.
it, and I asked many years ago when I began, when I was in my 20s, and I said, "Well, how did you get that story to end?" And the teacher at the time, the workshop, she says, "You just end it." You know, because no, everybody wants to hear a good story, but they don't know what your story is going to be. Just like with puppetry, they don't know what the puppet's going to do, but it's so exciting because they just lean in to what you're going to do. So with stories, it's the same. And so you find some story that you're compassionate about. I tell a lot of folk tales, fairy tales, but right now I'm compassionate about family tales. And that has really stirred a lot of really good memories in my own personal family. It really has.
Well, and I think everybody, I like to tell people if you've ever owned a house, if you grew up in a family, if you ever went to college, if you've ever had a job, and if you ever owned a car, if you can say yes to one of those things, you have stories. You
Yes.
definitely have stories. And your stories may not start with living in the woods. They may not start with canaries. They may not start with hummingbirds on the back porch, but everybody has a story that they can tell. It's remarkable and universal. Now you've got one more for us this evening, and I guess if I had to put a theme around all this, it seems like maybe flight or maybe wings would be the theme, because we did have the biplane. We had the canaries, we had the hummingbird, and this last one you call my chicken pet. And so I was a little concerned, is this a chicken that was a pet, or is this a chicken whose name was Pet? But I bet you're going to tell us when you share with us my chicken pet.
All right, so now you've heard that my mother loved birds. So I start it this way. Six little ducks that I once knew, fat ones, skinny ones, fair ones too, but the one little duck with a feather on her back, me. She led the others with a quack, 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 quack. She led the others with a quack, 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 quack. Now, my mother really did bring a lot of birds, and my daddy too, into our lives, and because we lived in the woods. And so one of the things that my father did was he brought duck eggs, and they hatched, and we had mallard ducks, and my brothers tried to teach them duck football. And then we had turtle eggs, and those were soft and malleable. And so, and then mom brought chicks. We had chicks. So in this last story, I had bantam chicks. I was the oldest, 14 at this time, and I had a bantam chick, and she grew to be a hen, and then she grew to lay eggs, and we had a rooster, so the eggs were fertile. So then she was sitting on the eggs, and I happen to know that between 20 and 22 days after a hen starts to sit on the eggs will hatch. And so I asked my mommy, "Mommy, can I stay home from school the day that the chickens hatch?" And she said, "I will let you stay home this day from school. But if they don't hatch that day, you have to go back to school the next day." Whew, I sure hope my calculations were right. So that morning, when all my brothers and my sister went off to school, I got to go out to the chicken coop, and I walked in, and the chicken the mama hen was. She was not happy I was in there, but too bad. She knew me, so I lifted her up. A banding chick is a tiny chicken. So I lifted her up to look, and the eggs had started pipping. So they were starting to hatch. So I said, well, I chose a good day. And so after a while, I would go back and forth, and they started to come out. And there were 9 eggs. And banding chicks have a lot of color. So they were black and white, and they came out of the eggs, and they were all gooey, and it was just amazing. But as they started to struggle, they would dry, and then they would start running around with their mommy and pee pee, pee pee, pee pee, pee pee. Well, they all hatched except one, and the one was pipping, but it was really having a hard time. And so I decided to help it. Now, if you read anything about that, that's not the best thing to do. But I did because I was a kid. So I helped this little chick out of its egg, and it dried just like the others, and it peeped just like the others, but it had a limp. It was very sad. And all its brothers and sisters knew it had a limp, and they all ran over and started pecking it. Was very sad. So I picked it up and I ran to the house, which is about, a football field away, and ran to the house and went in and told mommy, 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 this chick, when it hatched, it's hurt, and all of its brothers and sisters are pecking on it. And can I keep it in my room? And mommy looked at my big brown eyes and my long dark hair, and she said, yes, but you're in charge of that. I said, okay. So I got a little box and I went to our room. Kathy and I shared a room, and we had the wood floors, I told you. And so we put in the box, and then I went to school the next day, and I put feed and stuff in. Well, as the little chick began to grow, when we came home from school, the chick would jump out of the box and run down the hallway that was wood floors. Always so happy to see us when we came home from school. And so that was really fun. And then her name was Pet. So that's the name of by the name of the story. And her feathers developed pretty quickly, and so she was a white chicken with little black specks on her. And she was such a precious thing. And she loved me. She loved my brothers, my sister. I mean, she didn't even mind the dogs. The dogs didn't care. And so every day she just beep, 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 beep. Well, I wish that was the end of the story, but it was not, because one day Daddy came home from the farm very hot, very sweaty, very tired, and he was talking to Mom, and Pet came running. Beep, 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 beep. Now, the thing was, she was happy to see Dad too. But what Mom had made for the dinner that night for the round table with the big lazy Susan was a large bowl of spaghetti with meatballs and a big green salad and lots of iced tea. And when the chick came to jump up on the chair and to jump up on the table to see my daddy, it forgot about greeting my daddy and ran over and started pecking the spaghetti because, hey, to hit, it looked like it was worms. And my father came unglued. He yelled my name, Elizabeth. And I came running. I knew that yell. And I came running. And he said, get this chicken and put it in the coop. It's no longer in the house. I said, come on, Daddy. It's my pet. I love it. Elizabeth, yes, sir. So I grabbed Pet and I took it to the chicken coop, and I put it in or locked it up for the night with all the other chickens. But the funny thing was, if Pet had grown all the way into being a hen. And so when it was time for her to lay an egg, when we left the chickens out in the daytime, I was at school, but she would run to the house, which I told you was almost a football field. She would run to the house, come to my brother's sliding glass doors. There was a whole wall, and she would peck on the window. because she wanted to come in my brother's room and jump in their drawer and lay an egg. Now, I don't know how, if my mother could figure this out or what, but my mother would see this chicken come running across the lawn. And so she started, she had to leave for the day. She would leave the door open about this much in the woods. And then the chicken would come in, hop into the drawer. My mom had put a light bulb in there, so she thought she had another egg. And then she would lay her egg, and then she would leave and go back to the flock. And so it was such a gift to us to have all these bird stories in our lives. And when I did develop these at the after my mother was no longer here, my brother said, "What about this story? What about this story?" I said, "You can tell those." And that's my story about chicken pet.
Outstanding. Now, I have to tell you that I am a chicken story aficionado. I have three or four chicken stories of my own, and I really appreciate the way that you describe those chickens. And you said it would come in and lay in the drawer. So it would actually put the eggs in the drawer, or
So
would it go in the coop?
my brothers, there were four of them, so there was a four bunk beds, and there were drawers that were built on, they were floor level, so to for their clothing, so they kept it out and put it, I don't know why the chicken picked that, but that's what she did. And then with the light bulb, then she could sit there and lay her egg.
Now, chickens aren't the cleanest animal there is, but if you're going to have something nesting in your drawers with your t-shirts and your socks, I guess you could do worse than a chicken. I'm a big fan of chicken stories, that's for sure. When you're going to put a program together, or you're going to need four or five stories for something like this, or for another engagement, are you using these stories, these family stories, most often?
No, I don't think so. I have several that are just fun stories. When it gets to be October, we have some fun stories that are not scary, scary, but kids want to hear something that is a little on the stretching side. So yeah, I have,
Yeah.
and I have spring stories.
That's good. And so there's a, you can follow the calendar with Elizabeth's stories as time moves along and the seasons change, your stories are going to change too. That's fascinating. Any kind of anytime you grow up in an environment like that, it's just going to breed these stories. And I guess I would say an excellent story like that. That's
Thank you.
just you just scratched
Mm-hmm.
the surface with a story like that. That's you could just peck away at that for so long, I think. And pretty soon you've just feathered your whole coop with all of these tales. That is, I'm not sure how far we could stretch that out, but that's what happens, folks, when you get a storyteller on. And I tell you, we're about to be wrapping up here, but I didn't want you to get away without telling us you have retired from the library there in South Lake, but you still are back there from time to time doing programs. How long did you spend in the library? What was your
In that particular library, 18 years,
18
and then
years?
I told stories for 4 years in the Roanoke Public Library in Roanoke, Texas.
My
And then before
goodness.
that, I was down in Brookshire, Texas, in their little library and told stories there.
That's a town we're going to be familiar with this audience for sure. Brookshire, right down the street. And the library is a fantastic place to find stories, to learn stories, to read stories, but also to hear stories. I know libraries all across the state, all across the nation have storytellers, especially over the summer. There'll be library programs for storytelling. I'm, obviously passionate about it myself, and it's clear that you are too. But we are about to wrap up here, and I sure appreciate you coming out to be with us this evening. And I bet that you have dozens more stories that we could get you back
I'd
on
love
the
that.
airways to hear.
I'd love that.
Well, here we go. I've got the music will be coming up, and we've all got to get on our way. But I do want to thank you for coming out with us. And folks, if you're hearing us right here on KPFT, don't forget that coming up right after us is Charles Hightower's R&B Gold with his cool mix of soul. And don't forget, of course, that you're listening to member-supported programming on Houston's community station, KPFT. And we hope you make 90.1 a part of every day, whether you're home or you're driving home or you're just chilling. Be sure to join us. I think we're actually changing it up to Wednesdays for So What's Your Story, but find us on the dial and tune in with us. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Larry Thompson. I've been your host with Elizabeth Beeman from Justin, Texas. And from the two of us and the rest of the team, I thank you for listening. And remember, the storyteller serves the story, not the other way around. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Every day, diesel trucks chug along highways between ports, warehouses, factories, and retailers, spewing tailpipe exhaust as they go. Breathing these fumes is dangerous. Truck exhaust contains pollutants that have been associated with asthma, lung disease, heart problems, and cancer. Reagan Patterson is a Transportation Equity Research Fellow at the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation. She says minority communities often bear the worst of the pollution from diesel trucks.
This really has to do with discriminatory planning processes in which communities of color and low-income communities are often located near ports, major roadways, and distribution centers, and so therefore are disproportionately exposed to diesel exhaust.
Transitioning to electric trucks could help, because electric trucks do not emit harmful tailpipe pollution. So Patterson says heavy-duty vehicles should be top of mind for policymakers as they plan investments in clean transportation.
Really saying, how do we prioritize communities that are disproportionately exposed to diesel trucks?
So that the transportation of the future can help alleviate some of the inequities of the past. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Life in Focus, or LIF, presents lively, diverse, and sometimes controversial topics. Life features interviews, commentaries, and discussions that stimulate conversations around contemporary issues in politics, education, economics, women's issues, health and safety, history, entertainment, music, art, spoken word, relationships, and everyday life, all with an Afrocentric flavor. Anell Williams, producer-host, has a no-nonsense cut-to-the-chase style that is provocative and simply refreshing. Life in Focus with Anell Williams, Monday afternoons, 3 to 4 p.m., here on 90.1 KPFT.
Hi, this is Arnie Arneson, host of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson. I deliver an edgy, eclectic hour of people, policy, and politics. Tune into The Attitude with Arnie Arneson, Mondays at 5 a.m. and Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9 a.m. here on KPFT.